God is right now working in the hearts of people we would consider highly unlikely to ever become Christians. He's working, intending to bring them to faith in Christ and make them part of his eternal family. And he wants to use you and me. He wants to use us as an essential part of that process. Out in the foyer, we give away these books written by Lee Strobel. And if you've never read that, I'd encourage you, grab one, read it, and then pray, Lord, give me a friend who doesn't know you yet that I can give this to. Lee Strobel, for years, was an atheist, proud of it, newspaper reporter for the Chicago Tribune. He had made his mark. And his life was good. He had a wife who loved him, agreed with him, until one day God threw a monkey wrench in everything and his wife became a follower of Jesus Christ. And he came home and all of a sudden everything has changed. She's going to church, she's going to Bible study, she's got her Bible out there, she's reading it. And he is wondering, what did I do to deserve this? And he has shared his testimony, how bit by bit by bit, God used his wife, her consistent love, to draw him. It wasn't her intellectual arguments so much as it was her love that just drew him step by step by step. And ultimately, he did a thorough investigation. He was an investigative reporter, and he used all those journalistic skills to go back and look through the gospel accounts, the death, the resurrection of Jesus Christ. And he came to the conclusion, this is right. This is true. Jesus actually died, and he actually was raised again from the dead by God. And he became a follower of Jesus Christ. And he's written extensively. There's a film that's just out. He's sharing his testimony. And God has used him to touch hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of lives. God is right now working in the hearts of people we would consider highly unlikely to ever become Christians. And for some of you, that may be a spouse. For some of you, that may be a parent or a child. It may be a beloved teacher. It may be a neighbor. It may be a coworker who you've known for years, you've shared with, and there seems to be no movement whatsoever. Don't give up. Don't give up. The woman that you ride, sit next to on the bus every morning as you're going to work, God is working there. It's no accident that you have met her, the man at the fitness club who you got to know 5 years ago. And boy, friendly, you enjoy him, seems totally closed to anything you have to say about Jesus Christ. Do not give up. This summer, up till this point, we've been looking at Hebrews chapter 11. And I'm going to invite you, take your Bibles, turn there with me. Lives of men and women who believed God, acted in faith, and God used them to change the world. Hebrews chapter 11, I'm going to begin reading at verse 29. By faith, the people crossed the Red Sea as on dry land, but the Egyptians, when they attempted to do the same, were drowned. After that, God's people, they came to the edge of the promised land, and God said, trust me and move forward. And they said, no thanks. Let's go back to Egypt. Let's go back to Egypt, where at least we had leeks and garlic and cucumbers and all that good stuff. And they forgot so quickly the onerous load that was on them as slaves. 40 years later is verse 30 of Hebrews chapter 11. There is a 40-year gap between verse 29 and verse 30 because the people lived in disobedience. And God said, okay, have it your way. None of you will ever enter the promised land. Your children will. But over the next 40 years, you who doubted my ability, doubted my character, doubted my word, you will die. So we come to verse 30. It was by faith. There we are. It was by faith that the people of Israel marched around Jericho 7 days and the wall came crashing down. It was by faith that Rahab the prostitute did not die with all the others in her city who refused to obey God, for she had given a friendly welcome to the spies. Joshua is not mentioned here, but Joshua is really the individual in charge now. Moses died. Joshua is the new designated, God-designated leader. What do we know about Joshua? He was Moses' right-hand man for years. He watched, he followed. Joshua was one of the 12 spies that was sent into the land of Israel to take a look around and bring a report back. There were 12 that went. There were 12 that came back. 10 of those 12 said, "We can't go. They'll kill us. They're big." And they were big. "We can't go. We're going to die there." And you know what? What they said was true up to the point they said, "We're going to die there." Because they had the word of Almighty God, "I will go ahead of you. I will go ahead of you." In fact, here's what we read in Numbers 13. The Lord said to Moses, "Send out men to explore the land of Canaan, the land I'm giving to the Israelites. I'm giving to the Israelites. Send one leader from each of the 12 ancestral tribes." So Moses did as the Lord commanded him. He sent out 12 men, all the tribal leaders of Israel, from the camp in the wilderness of Paran. These were the tribes and the names of the leaders. And then it goes through one by one by one. And Joshua was one of those. So here is Joshua leading the people 40 years later. And I bet he is reflecting on what happened 40 years prior. 40 years. When those 12 went into the land, and 10 came back and said, "Absolutely not." Joshua and Caleb, too, said, "Of course we need to go. God's already given us his promise. Let's trust the Lord. Let's walk in faith. Let's move in." What do we know about this first incident 40 years earlier? The number of men sent were 12. All of the men are named. All of the men were leaders. Moses gave them detailed instructions about their assignment, and they came back and gave a bad report about the promised land. Yeah, in fact, here's what they said verbatim. "We can't go up against them. They're stronger than we are." So they spread this bad report about the land amongst the Israelites. "The land we traveled through and explored will devour anyone who lives there." Okay, why are people living there right now? "All the people we saw were huge. We even saw giants there, the descendants of Anak. Next to them, we felt like grasshoppers," and that's what they thought too. That's Numbers 13. And as a result, the Israelites, they grumbled, they doubted, they despaired. They wanted to kill Moses. They wanted to set up their own leadership. They rebelled against God, and they dishonored the promises that God has made. As a result of that, they wandered for 40 long years. And so here we are, 40 years later. And Joshua is wondering, what can I do as leader now to prevent something similar from happening? Here's what we read in Joshua chapter 2, verse 1. Joshua chapter 2, and we're going to be most of our time in Joshua. If you want to turn there, Joshua is in the Old Testament, the Hebrew Scriptures, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy. It's the sixth book, Joshua. Joshua chapter 2, verse 1. "Then Joshua secretly sent out 2 spies from the Israelite camp at the Acacia Grove. He instructed them, 'Scout out the land on the other side of the Jordan River, especially around Jericho.'" Look at the differences. Instead of 12, there are only 2. These spies are not named, and we learn later in chapter 6, they're just ordinary Israelite young men. And Joshua, he doesn't give them very much by way of instruction. Just go, take a look around the city of Jericho. So they cross the Jordan River. They're coming down on Jericho. Jericho was a fortified, walled city. In fact, Moses earlier had said their cities are walled up unto the heavens, probably 5 to 10 acres in size. Not all that huge by our standards. There weren't all that many people there as there are today. Now, in Joshua chapter 1, God assured the Israelites he would give them victory. In fact, here's what he says to Joshua. He says, "What I promised Moses, I promise you as well. Wherever you set foot, it'll be land that I've given you. From the Negev to Lebanon to the Euphrates to the Mediterranean Sea. Listen to this. No one will be able to stand against you as long as you live. For I will be with you as I was with Moses. I will not fail. I will not abandon you." Is that a promise you can take to the bank? Absolutely, that is. Absolutely. So Joshua has that promise, but he's sending in 2 spies. Here's the question. Why? Why? If he has the promise of God that anywhere you go, I've already given you that land, no one will be able to stand against you, why does he send in 2 spies? I don't think it's because Joshua's faith had weakened over those 40 long years. I don't think it's because Joshua was struggling or doubting. In fact, I think it was God motivating in Joshua's heart, send in a couple of spies. And we're going to see in just a little bit why God did that. This is the rest of Joshua chapter 2, verse 1. "So the 2 men set out and came to the house of a prostitute named Rahab and stayed there that night." Now, if you'd not read the Bible before, you'd probably be thinking, okay, so these 2 guys think, well, we got a few nights on the town. And they go in and ask around, where can we have a good time? And somebody directs them to Rahab's house. I don't think that is what's going on at all. I don't think these are 2 young Israelite men who threw over all the traces as soon as they left. I think God sovereignly directed them to this woman. And yeah, we look and say, well, spending the night in the house of a prostitute, couldn't you have done anything better than that? God knew what he was doing. Let's continue reading here. Joshua chapter 2, verses 2 through 3. "But someone told the king of Jericho, 'Some Israelites have come here tonight to spy out the land.' So the king of Jericho sent orders to Rahab, 'Bring out the men who have come into your house, for they've come here to spy out the whole land.'" What does the king know? The king knows who they are. He knows they're Israelites. He knows where they are, Rahab's house, and he knows their mission, spy out the land. They are not getting off on a good foot, are they? Yeah, it's kind of like, okay, what else could go wrong? They were found out. And there's no doubt, you know, there's this vast horde of Israelites camped not far away. People are probably keeping an eye on them and wondering, what's this all about? What's going to happen? So imagine, you're one of these 2 young men. You're in their sandals. The king sends men. They're pounding on the door. "Let us in. Let us in. We know these guys came." And Rahab, verse 4, here's what we read. "Rahab had hidden the 2 men, but she replied." In fact, you could literally translate the Hebrew, "and she replied." The picture you get is while the king's men are banging on the door, she is up on the roof hiding them. "I'll be right there. Just a minute. Yeah, I just got to find my sandals. Be right there." That's the picture. These 2 Israelite young men, they don't know a thing about this woman other than the fact she's a prostitute. And their lives hang on her. On her wisdom. She's a Canaanite. Rahab had hidden the 2 men, but she replied, "Yes, the men were here earlier, but I didn't know where they were from. They left the town at dusk as the gates were about to close. I don't know where they went. If you hurry, you can probably catch up with them." Actually, she had taken them up to the roof and hidden them beneath bundles of flax she had laid out. Rahab lied, okay? And for generations, Christians have debated, was what she did legit or not? First thing I gotta say, she's a Canaanite prostitute. She's a Canaanite prostitute. She is not a believer in the God of heaven and earth. That doesn't excuse her lying, but she's living in a different culture with different standards. The Bible, it's interesting, never comments on her lying. The book of Joshua doesn't. The book of Hebrews doesn't. In fact, in Hebrews 11, she's commended for her faith, not for her deception, not for her lies, but for her faith. So she tells these envoys from the king, oh, they left. You know, it's a stroke of genius. Yeah, they left a little bit ago, just before the gates were locked, and if you hurry, you can probably catch up with them. And so she puts him in a bind. What are they going to do? Stay there and search the house, or jump on their horses, camels, whatever they had, and take off looking for these spies. And they decide, well, we're going to take off. Verse 7. So the king's men went looking for the spies along the road leading to the shallow crossings of the Jordan River. As soon as the king's men had left, the gates of Jericho were shut. Rahab is good. She's convincing. She lies convincingly. She deceives them. They take off. They're locked out all night pursuing men that they will never find because they're not there. They're locked out. The spies are locked in. They are in her debt, but they're still in her power. If she chose, she could still sound the alarm. What's the picture at this point that you have of Rahab? She thinks quick, she's decisive, she's cunning. The king's messengers, they prove to be fairly gullible. The spies prove to be somewhat bumbling. And Joshua, well, maybe he didn't make the best choice when he picked these two guys. He's a little green yet. But Rahab, boy, she's the picture of competence. Now, I skipped over a little part of the story, just a little detail, but an important one. The author tells us that Rahab had flax drying on the roof. Any of you dried flax recently? I haven't either. I don't intend to. It was used for making linen. Sometimes it was cultivated. Mostly it grew wild. Rahab had flax drying on her roof, which probably means she was out earlier in the day, earlier looking for flax, harvesting flax. They didn't grow it in the city. It grew outside the city. Some have looked at this and thought, maybe she was trying to get into a better profession. That may well be the case. That may well be the case. She said, I can't do what I've been doing. Maybe she was outside the walls earlier that day looking for flax, harvesting flax, and two nice young Israelite men come up. And in their best Canaanite accents say, how are you? And there's a conversation they start. Maybe she found a bunch of flax and they offered to carry it for her. We don't know. We don't know. I do think this. These two Israelite young men were not actively looking for a prostitute. I think God in his sovereignty led them to Rahab. This was not an accident. It was not an accident. So verse 8. Before the spies went to sleep that night, Rahab went up on the roof to talk with them. Okay, while I read these next verses, I want you to be looking for all the things Rahab knows. All the things Rahab knows. Rahab went up on the roof to talk to them. Verse 9, I know the Lord has given you this land, she told them. We are all afraid of you. Everyone in the land is living in terror, for we have heard how the Lord made a dry path for you through the Red Sea when you left Egypt. And we know what you did to Sihon and Og, the two Amorite kings east of the Jordan River, whose people you completely destroyed. No wonder that our hearts have melted in fear. No one has the courage to fight after hearing such things. For the Lord your God is the supreme God of the heavens above and the earth beneath. What did Rahab know? What can we learn from Rahab's speech? She knew, first of all, about Israel's God, and she calls him by name, Yahweh. Yahweh, the Lord, the God, the mighty God. She knew that the fall of Canaan was inevitable because God had given this land to his people. Third thing she knew, her countrymen lived in dread of Yahweh. In fact, this is a fulfillment of what God had mentioned earlier in the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 11, verse 25. No one will be able to stand against you. The Lord your God, as he promised, will put the terror and fear of you on the whole land. Well, that was coming true. Rahab knew that 40 years earlier, Yahweh had delivered his people through the Red Sea. Probably knew that the Egyptians had drowned. Rahab knows that recently, two pagan kings who refused to give safe passage to Israel, they both were killed. And it's interesting because she names an event 40 years earlier. Your God took you through the Red Sea. She names a recent event. Your God delivered you from these two pagan kings. It's as though she is putting bookends on this and saying, for 40 years, your God has led, provided, protected, guided, proven himself faithful again and again. And Rahab also knew Yahweh is the most powerful God throughout the universe. No doubt in her mind. The supreme God of the heavens above and the earth below. That phrase is only used of God two other times in all of Hebrew scripture. Once it's used by Moses, and the other time it's used by Solomon. So here's the deal. You got Moses, Solomon, leaders, kings, godly men. Oh, and by the way, Rahab, who called God by this name. That is pretty elite company for Rahab to be in. What did Rahab not know? Rahab does not yet know that he is God alone. She may have taken Yahweh and tacked him on to her pre-existing Canaanite gods, Baal and all the others. I don't know if at this point she knows he is supreme God, the only God. She didn't know of all of his attributes, and she didn't know him personally. But you look at what she did know. What would you think? She is well on her way. And I want to emphasize again, God is right now working in the hearts of people we would consider highly unlikely. A Canaanite prostitute. And God tells you, go tell her about who I am. Lord, could you find me someone easier? A Canaanite prostitute. You got to be kidding. It's like when Ananias gets the word. There's a man named Saul. I want you to go tell him about. Lord, you don't know about this guy. Let me tell you about him. What a miserable mess he is. And God says, no. I'm at work in his heart. God is right now working in the hearts of people we would consider highly unlikely to ever put their faith in Jesus Christ. So verse 12, here's how Rahab continues. Now swear to me by the Lord. Notice it's not by her God, it is by their God, Yahweh. Swear to me that you will be kind. That is a key word, that you will be kind to me and my family since I have helped you. Literally, that phrase, I have helped you, is I have been kind to you. Give me some guarantee that when Jericho is conquered, you will let me live along with my father and mother, my brothers and sisters, and all their families. We offer our lives, our own lives, as a guarantee for your safety, the men agreed. If you don't betray us, we will keep our promise and be kind, there it is again, to you when the Lord gives us the land. God had told Joshua, when you conquer these cities, you kill everyone. You kill everyone. And now they're making a deal with this Canaanite prostitute. We won't kill you. What gives here? What gives here? She had been kind to them. The Hebrew word that is used there is chesed. It's the word that we get our English word grace, undeserved kindness, unmerited favor. When you deserve just the opposite, you are treated with grace and kindness, chesed. And they say, you have treated us with kindness, and we will do the same for you. We will be kind to you when the Lord gives us the land. They make a guarantee. You and everyone you fit in your house will not die. Will not die. Verse 15. Then since Rahab's house was built into the town wall, she let them down by a rope through the window. Escape to the hill country, she told them. Hide there for 3 days from the men searching for you. Then when they've returned, you can go on your way. Before they left, the men told her, we will be bound by the oath we have taken only if you follow these instructions. When we come into the land, you must leave this scarlet rope hanging from the window through which you let us down. And all your family members, your father, mother, brothers, your relatives, must be here inside the house. If they go out into the street and are killed, it will not be our fault. If anyone lays a hand on people inside this house, we will accept the responsibility for their death. If you betray us, however, we are not bound by this oath in any way. A scarlet rope. And they give her all the stipulations. Here's what you have to do. Many have looked at this and seen an indication, a picture of what happened 40 years earlier to the Israelites just before they left Egypt. When God through Moses said, kill a lamb, take the blood, put it on the top lintel, down the sides of your doorpost, red blood, and the angel of death will pass over you. Hence the term Passover. Passover. And so here is this red rope out the window. And the guarantee, all of those in the house, that was what Moses said. If you're out when the angel comes, you'll die. If you're in the house when the angel comes, you are guaranteed life. And what a picture of what Jesus did 2,000 years ago when he placed his blood over us. And all who are in Christ have nothing to fear. Death is an enemy. It is the final enemy, but it is a conquered enemy because of Jesus Christ. I think the main reason that God sent the spies was not so that they could get inside Jericho and take a look around and come back with a battle plan. I think the main reason God sent the spies was to get Rahab out of Jericho. To get her out, not to get them in, but to get her and her family, whoever else wanted to trust, as she was already trusting Yahweh, the God of heaven and earth. You know what that means for you and me? It is no accident that the folks who moved in just down the block last month are there. It is no accident that you've ridden on that bus for years with that woman. You've gotten to know each other. You become friendly. It is no accident that the guy who works on the bench next to you at the shop, you've gotten to know. It is no accident. The stores that you shop at, the gym where you work out, the people that you eat lunch with, in the break room, day after day after day. It is no accident. It may be God put you there to get people out. Howard Hendricks, years ago, I've told you this story, Dr. Howard Hendricks, professor of Mike and mine, years ago, he was speaking at a conference and a woman came up to him, oh, Professor Hendricks, pray for me. I'm the only Christian in my whole business. And Dr. Hendricks said, oh, you got to be kidding. No, it's horrible. I'm the only Christian. You got to be kidding. No. And Professor Hendricks looked at her and said, I can't believe it that God has entrusted all the lives of those people to you. That is what we're seeing right here. Verse 22. The spies went up into the hill country and stayed there 3 days. The men who were chasing them searched everywhere along the road, but they finally returned without success. There we are. That's the one I wanted. Then the two spies came down from the hill country, crossed the Jordan River, and reported to Joshua all that had happened to them. The Lord has given us the whole land, they said, for all the people in the land are terrified of us. Yeah, so the spies, they did come back with a report, but they also came back having done what God wanted done with a Canaanite prostitute. Real quickly, what can we learn? What can we learn? We were Rahab. We were Rahab. We were alienated from God. Not that we were prostitutes, I'm not saying that, but outsiders to God's love, outside his covenant of love. Ephesians 3 talks about that. Aliens from the promise. We were trapped in Jericho and we were soon to die with everyone else. Eternally perish, as John 3:16 says, for God so loved the world that he gave his one and only son, that whoever believes in him will not perish but have everlasting life. And somebody risked his time, maybe his reputation, developed a friendship, risked offending you by asking pointed questions, risked getting involved with you, risked his comfort, invested his time, and you came to the point where you put your faith in Jesus Christ. We have been the recipients of God's chesed because somebody took a risk on us. And now we are tasked with taking the good news of God's love, grace, and kindness to those who are still locked inside of Jericho. We're not Rahab. If you've put your faith in Jesus Christ, you're a spy. You're a spy. God has planted you in that neighborhood, in that business, in that school, in that work environment. We are spies sent back into Jericho because there are people still inside the walls in whose hearts God is even now working. Did you hear that? There are people inside Jericho that he already has claimed for his own from all eternity past. And his sovereign design is to use you, just like he used those spies, to bring a message of good news to those who are still there. Those who God has chosen, I've noticed over my short lifetime, they don't have a stamp on their forehead that says, talk to me about Jesus, I'm ready. They don't come with those stamps there. So what do we have to do? We share the good news, the message of Jesus Christ with anyone and everyone, and we find there are people who are receptive. And more often than not, God designs our path to lead us to those people. It's no accident that you live in that neighborhood. It is no accident. That was God's design. So these two unnamed spies, they may have bumbled their way through this chapter, but they had the help, the guidance, and the protection of the Almighty Creator of heaven and earth, and he used them. We are all spies. God is working in the lives of all kinds of people in all kinds of ways, even people who make me uncomfortable. Rahabs. We've had kids attending our Awana every Wednesday night who go to Grant, and they have not grown up in a intact, healthy home environment. And they bring their problems with them. And you know what that means? They act out. They act up. They can be hard. They can be difficult. And it's uncomfortable when you hear some of the stories. The first year when I was pastoring out in the valley that we sent our high school kids to a week of camp, Camp Shimokin, the UGM camp, with a group of kids from a school in the valley who had almost no church experience. The first night, a little teenage gal somehow got cell reception. I don't know how she did. Because UGM camp, you got very, very spotty cell reception. She got her mom on the phone and said, Mom, come and get me now. You will not believe what I'm hearing from these kids. She'd grown up in a church environment, and what she was hearing, it was not things that she had heard in a church environment. And the mom called our youth pastor, said, "What in the world is going on?" And the youth pastor said, "Give her one more day. Give her one more day. And if tomorrow night she still wants to go home, come and get her." The mom called back the next night and said, "Should I come?" She said, "Why would you do that? Why would you want to do that?" "No, I'm doing fine." God is working in the lives of all kinds of people in all kinds of ways. And it may well be that you are uncomfortable with the Rahabs God has placed in your life. Yeah, they don't come neatly dressed and knowing all about the God of this book. So what do? Maybe you ask your Rahab, "How can I pray for you?" I found that to be a pretty safe question. How can I pray for you? Maybe you give your Rahab that book that's out there called The Case for Christ and tell him this was written by a man who was an unabashed atheist. And it's about what God did in his life. It made sense to me. Tell me what you think. Maybe you ask your Rahab, "Hey, someday I want to find out how God is working in your life." Or maybe you tell your Rahab, "Here's how I see God working in your life." Maybe you tell your Rahab about an answer to prayer God has recently done in your life. Maybe you ask your Rahab, "Would you be interested in reading through the Gospel of John with me this fall? Let's do it once a week. Just read through. And any questions you have, we'll read through. That's all we're going to do. And see if God might use that to bring her or him one step closer to Jesus Christ." Those spies took a risk. When they walked through the gates of Jericho, they took a huge risk. When the gates closed, they took a risk. It is always risky. And we don't know what might happen, but we do know this. It's no accident. God has brought that Rahab into your life. We need to work hard at getting past first impressions. Rahabs dress and talk like Rahabs. That's just the way they come. But that's not the way God leaves them. We need to view our Rahabs as works in process, on the way, not complete and finished. God gives great encouragement as Rahabs become members of his family. As these spies came back, they encouraged Joshua. They encouraged the hearts of people. And I bet they were encouraged as well by what they totally unexpected saw God doing. We have no idea what God might do through a Rahab. Lee Strobel's wife, I bet she, in her wildest dreams, never imagined he would be an apologist for Jesus Christ, and there would be scores of thousands of men and women who come to faith in Jesus Christ because of him. We read in Matthew chapter 1, verse 5, that Rahab went on to marry. By the way, I don't have time. You know the story. They walked 6 times around the walls. The seventh day they walked seven times. The walls came down, but Rahab and everyone in her house were saved. She went with the Israelites. She became a part of Israel. She married. She had a family. She married a man named Salmon. They had a child named Boaz. Boaz married a woman named Ruth, who, like her mother, was a Gentile. Rahab finds herself in the thick of the story of God. Rahab is one of the ancestors of no one less than Jesus Christ. No one less than Jesus Christ. We have no idea what God may do if we're willing to take a risk and reach out to that Rahab that he has placed in our sphere, in our orbit. It is unthinkable that those who have received the kindness and grace of God would not eagerly share it with others. One day I was sitting at a nice pastor's get-together, a lunch, and we were getting introduced around the table, and this woman sitting across the table from me, I assumed she was the wife of the pastor, and she introduced herself, and I said, "Nice to meet you," and she said, "I work getting women out of deja vu in the valley," because I was a dancer there for years. And she said, your face is getting a little flushed. God used her to reach into that same environment. She had been a recipient of his grace, love, kindness. How could she not offer that back to those that she knew? So here's my question. What would you fill in? My Rahab is, who would you put there? What name? Who is it that God has brought into your circle, into your orbit, into your life? Who is my Rahab? God is right now working in the hearts of people we would consider highly unlikely to ever become Christians, intending to bring them to faith in Christ and make them part of his eternal family. And he wants to use you as an essential part of that process. Would you say yes? Would you say yes? In the quietness of your heart, would you say, "Lord, I am willing. I am willing. Use me this week." By the way, one other huge lesson. No one is ever too far that the grace of God cannot reach them. No one is ever too far that the grace of God cannot reach them.